Welcome to Table Talk, the podcast that takes an in-depth look at the dynamic and exciting restaurant world. We sit down with industry leaders as they share best practices, highlight smart solutions, and discuss strategies for growth, ultimately helping food service operators learn how to affect positive change and grow their business. Now, here is your host, editor and publisher of Food Service and Hospitality Magazine, Rosanna Kyra.
So I'm happy to say we have Mark McEwen with us this morning as our first chef being interviewed as part of our new series, a podcast series. Mark is obviously well known to everybody in Toronto and across Canada as one of the city's top chefs. And not only is he a successful chef, but he's also a very successful restaurant operator and runs a series of other businesses. So I'm thrilled to have Mark here today. Mark, thank you for joining us today. I look forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you, Rosanna. I haven't been a first in a long time.
Well, I'm glad
that's
that you're
nice. So you and I have known each other many, many years now.
Our
career sort of started almost at the same time, which is interesting.
They did, actually, which is really odd. But it's been wonderful to watch your progress and to see the successes you've had. So again, thank you for joining us this morning.
Pleasure. Great to be here.
So I guess when I look back on your career and having known you from the get-go, you've really managed to do what a lot of chefs in the industry haven't done, and that's be successful commercially and critically for almost 40 years, which is amazing. So I guess my question to you is, what do you attribute that to? Because there's not that many chefs that can really meld the two.
Well, I'm pretty good on the math side. And numbers are important to me. And I think as an individual, I've always been pretty highly organized. So I've never looked at the solely from the perch of a chef. I've sort of looked at it from an ownership standpoint and had to sign the check. So you know, what you don't learn, you teach yourself quickly. And again, end of day, it's all pretty simple science. It either makes sense or it doesn't. And if it doesn't make sense, you have to find a solution to it and a way around it. So you have to have a bit of a creative mind. So I guess I was just kind of naturally built to in that box. It always just seemed like a very normal place for me to be.
Well, that's amazing because like the left side and the right side are in sync, I guess.
Well, yeah, you know, life is humbling because you'll run into things that were unexpected and it'll really challenge your abilities to respond to it. And I've had many of those in my career, but there's always ways around it. And if you can keep your head and ask the right questions and speak to the right people, the right type of information, find your way through things. Where if you take it sort of emotionally and everything is a catastrophe and you're reacting right to things by climbing the wall, you typically don't achieve very much. So I always look at other people outside, and there are many, many industries that are far more complicated. Our industry is still a cook, a server, a table, a chair, a client, a plate of food, a bottle of wine, and really not much has changed in it. So we don't deal with those cataclysmic changes, those earth-shaking changes. End of day, I try to size it up in my business that I'm truly as good as my last memory in a client's mind, and I'm either good for that or I'm making up ground.
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting answer, and I understand what you're saying, but you know, it's not complicated, as you said. It's about food and service. However, when you're running a company like yours with so many different moving parts, it's not as easy as you make it sound. There's a lot of details to take into consideration. There's a lot of problems with staff and issues that come into play. So you're making it sound really easy. And I know that you do such a great job at it, but I don't think it's as easy as that, maybe.
No, it's not. And we have lots of challenges. People are the main challenge, situations and, the complexity of opening operations, the cost of opening operations. There's a time period that you have to absorb that and be patient with it. and nurture it along, because, you know, companies just don't start printing money out of the gate typically.
Of course.
So, and we also, Toronto is a very, very competitive arena now. Our industry has just built out at a tremendously fast pace in the last 10 years. In the last five, I would say, you know, you don't see traditional retail opening anymore. You only see food service retail opening now. Mm-hmm. So there's more and more competition, and people have to be even sharper today to survive. So we're always looking over our shoulder, always trying to improve our employee base. Because I'm a big believer that there's 10% of your employees you should probably get rid of. And there's 10% you should bring up through the ranks. And there's 10% that you should bring in at the bottom. A little bit of fresh water to keep everybody focused and to keep a really vital environment in terms sort of intellectually in and amongst the people that work with you in the company. It's really vital. So we went through some changes this year, which I think have landed us in a very good spot, because it offered opportunity to people that were deserving of it and anxious to get a hold of it. And it allowed us to bring some fresh blood in on the bottom end. So it never stops moving. And every day you wake up to a new challenge. And so, you know, we have many of them, because we have restaurant on a high-end level, on a casual level. We have catering on a high-end level, on a casual level. We do retail. We do wholesale manufacturing of food for the airport, for all the kiosks. So we build food in a whole bunch of different ways.
That's just amazing, Mark. I mean, how many people do you have in the entirety?
We're about 650, burgeoning on 700 now, employees. Wow. Which sort of blows me away a little bit.
No kidding.
You know, you go between the properties and you feel like you're running for office. you're you know, there's a certain social aspect to saying hello to everybody and goodbye to everybody. And so I try to get all my business done by email and phone conversation and what have you. And then when I walk the properties, it can be not so much where you need to sit down and have necessarily FaceTime. It can just be a nice light conversation. And there's a lot of people to see and a lot of doors to open and places to go now, that's for sure.
So I remember you telling me once that you start your day pretty early, like around five or so. And is that still applied to you now, that with you having so many different components? Is it 3 o'clock in the morning now?
No, it was 4:30 yesterday.
4:30, okay.
I got up at 4:30. I sort of wake up when I wake up. And then I have a very bad habit of starting to communicate with people at a very early hour. And I'm trying to temper that, because it's really not socially acceptable.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But what I realize is people sleep with their devices.
Yes, they do.
I don't sleep with my phone next to me. So my assumption is that you're going to wake up and you're going to have a cup of coffee, and then you'll see that I contacted you, and you'll get to me when you get to me. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way, right?
I had an employee respond to me at 4:45 in the morning the other day, and they said, "Are you a vampire?"
No, you're just pretty amazing getting up that early.
So I apologize. I said I shouldn't be doing that. I felt bad. Well,
yeah, you're not doing it with the intention they're going to respond right away, but I understand what you're saying for sure.
Yeah.
So in your almost 40-year history, what's been the biggest and most significant change that you've seen, firstly, in independent restaurants? Because that's really where you got your big start. I know you started in hotels, but what's been the biggest motivating or significant change you've seen in independent restaurants?
On a positive side?
Both. Could be both.
Well, I think that on a positive side, the energy that the industry has today and the profile the industry has is like I never imagined when I started out in this business. When I started, it was vocational school you went to, and that's the way people looked at it. Trade school.
Right. Yep.
You were not going to Paris to a cooking institution, or to New York City, or to George Brown, where it's looked at very glamorously now. Mm-hmm. People were in shock that I was going to do that. But no one understood it. There was no language. There was no conversation socially about being a chef or you know, the restaurant is as it is today. So it has an energy that is who would have known it would have landed here, from TV to notoriety to the number of restaurants to the food scene. It's quite extraordinary. Or you have young boys who stay home and make souffles on the weekend because it's cool. Like, well, you know, we used to play in cardboard boxes when we were 9 years old.
I know, hard to imagine.
So the world has changed dramatically. On the flip side of that is today that, being that there are so many restaurants, I'd say there's a shortage of capable people to work in the business, meaning cooks and servers and sommeliers and managers. You really have to almost make them and train them, find the right personalities and train them, because it's become so incredibly competitive to find and garner good staff to open up an establishment. Because it's really the lifeblood. They're the tip of the spear. You know, you can have great ideas and a beautiful room and a beautiful menu, but if it's not executed well and not delivered well, it won't land well, right? So at the end of the day, our industry is so simple. It comes down to service, comes down to aptitude, attitude, very simple ABC basics, which many, many times are the hardest things to capture.
So, Mark, when you talk about those shortages, because that's something that is so so key in the industry these days, but to be honest, as long as I've been in the industry, we've been talking about labor shortages to some degree.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so what do you do when you have such an empire now and you need so many different people to service all of those restaurants and businesses and there's such a shortage? How do you attract the kind of people that you need? Because you have, there's an expectation when someone goes to a McEwen restaurant or a McEwen business that the service is going to be top notch. So what do you do? How do you struggle with that reality?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and being a judge on Top Chef, people kind of line you up in their sights too. Like they'll even be a little tougher on you.
For sure.
And deservedly so. That's just the way the world unfolds, right? I think first and foremost, we treat people very, very well. We have a nice culture to work in. It's a very nice working environment. It's a learning environment. We make everything from scratch. We don't bake our own bread because it's too complicated for us operationally, but mm-hmm. we make everything. So, you know, a young person coming in can sort of learn the business soup to nuts in a very credible way and walk away and carry a lot of language and expertise that they need to do well out there. And we also teach people how to do service well. You know, if you're a cook and you can't do service, you're really not useful to anybody. You know, you may have good ideas, but if you can't actually put rubber on the ground and make it happen, mm-hmm. then you're pretty useless as a chef and a server and a manager. So we really stress those basics. And so I think we teach good learning skills. And then end of day, I think I pay people well. I've always paid higher than industry standard. I generally pay cooks, like starting cooks, higher than industry standard, but I certainly pay my chefs far more than the industry pays to keep them focused and feeling like they're a part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then end of the day, it's like you just have to create an environment that people want to stay in. And we've been very good at capturing people and keeping them for a long time. I've never believed in the old culture of screaming and yelling and making service more stressful than it already is. So I'm sort of the other end of that side. I may have a serious mug on me, but I'm not a shouter.
Right. So you treat people with dignity.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's very funny. This year I had a few calls when, there was some scandals in the industry about people treating women poorly and with the Norm Hardy scandal. And then my phone lit up and people were asking me questions and wanted to interview me. And I actually had people questioning me, like, what are your practices? How do you, how many women do you employ and what do you pay them and how do you treat them? And I'm like, okay, well, I'll tell you, that 75% of my senior management in the company is female. And they make exactly the same as what their male counterparts would make. So I said, I don't have any issues with this. And I said, I think it's really funny that we're even talking about it because we've been doing this for the last 15 years. I don't know how you survive without having a whole bunch of women in your executive team in today's marketplace. So I found those questions very, very interesting. And then when I told them what we're doing, they were like, "Oh, okay." Like, was anything else? You know.
Well, that's amazing, Mark. But you know, there are a lot of operators who don't think that same way. So it's amazing that you know they do think differently. But it is a reality in the industry, as you know.
Yeah, I've always found on an executive level that most of the women I have in the company are a little more mature than a lot of the men. It's funny, at a certain age, there's a certain temperament and a judgment.
Yes.
And that's been my history with people. So I've never been shy to lean in that direction. There's a lot of conversation about it, but it doesn't really pertain to our company at all.
Well, that's pretty amazing. What do you think the industry needs to do differently to make that more of a reality for all restaurants as opposed to just the handful like that?
Well, I think when you take it from a chef's standpoint, when you have a woman in the kitchen that really has the ability to do it, I think you offer them the opportunity to do it. Right? I think first and foremost, you have to recognize talent and reward talent. And if you can have people shine like that, I think it's a great example. Pretty simple science. And I don't, it's a tough industry. It's tougher for a woman in the industry than a man. You know, men don't give birth to babies. We don't have to deal with that on a personal level. So, and that's a big challenge for people as they grow older in the industry, because our business demands a lot of time, and it demands a lot of time. It may be the hours you don't really want to work. So it doesn't necessarily fit into a normal life cycle for most people. So you have to be sort of uniquely adapted to it, that you accept that and you get past all that. And once you do that, I think it's a fabulous industry, because you kind of fall into the flow of what it is we are. Like, my wife never competed with my job, and she never expected me to necessarily be home. And she was amazing with the kids. And when I came home, I did my part. And like, my sons, they're going through the feeding thing every 3 hours now. So we went through that. We were reminding ourselves about all that. Mm-hmm. But you did it as a couple, as a team, right? You didn't compete for space. And that's what you really have to find. And that's all about picking the right partner and really taking your career seriously and making your life work with your career, right?
Do you think restaurants will have to change the way they operate to accommodate not just even females who want to have a family life, but with millennials and what they're looking at from the work world? Are you having to adapt the way you run the business to accommodate some of this flexibility?
Well, I think millennials are a bit of a challenge. All in all, they're a very good category. But all in all, I think can be a very distracted category. Mm-hmm. They have a very different view of their day, of their life, of how they interact, what a day's work is, what a length of time to spend an employee is. They move very quickly. You know, a month for them is a long time.
For sure.
Eight hours of work is a long time. And, I'm not comparing myself or the way I used to work when I was young, because it was a different world, but I didn't have all the distractions that they have. You know, and especially social media, I find
yes.
many of them spend just far too much time on that. And I don't believe that it's necessarily productive for them. So I think the greatest thing you can have today is a young person. And I try to say this to them without sounding kind of funny and preachy, is that the greatest thing you can have in a job today is that when you walk into a job, you imagine the person that hired you. What is the expectation of that individual on you? What are they hoping you're going to do?
Right.
And what exactly is your job? Like, really think about yourself in the abstract. Like, walk outside your body and have a long look at yourself and say, okay, I've been hired to do this job. What is doing an exceptional job mean? Time spent, accuracy, getting along with, you know, employees, working for the common good, meeting at cost expectations, all of those things. Mm-hmm. If they actually prioritized all that, they would rise to the top of the pot like olive oil instantaneously.
Right.
They would be recognized. So again, I go back to, you know, how you interact on a daily basis in business with people socially, you know, when you're working on the line, and did you do anything that was meaningful that day? Did you impact people? Did you make friends? Did you make people happy?
Right.
So life at the end of the day is actually really simple. We make it complicated.
Very true.
And I think the crutch of social media takes way too much of their time and focus away. And I believe this is a major negative for them. And I hope at some point they realize that having peace and quiet and focus is the greatest thing you can have.
You've said that very well, Mark.
Yeah.
So tell me what excites you about the marketplace today. You've been in it a long time. We've talked a little bit about the changes that have happened, but what's exciting for you in today's marketplace?
My son is involved in my business with me, which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thriving and doing just an exceptionally good job. So I'm lucky to have him because he's an independent thinker and doer. And that's exactly what I need. So on that personal side, that's amazing. And, you know, to how far we can grow, we just have to grow correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So we opened three businesses last year. 2019, we're taking a year off. We're going to get everything in order the way until we're comfortable, and then we'll look for the next opportunity. But I'm 62 now, but I feel very young. I don't want to stop. I want to just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to keep growing the company in a meaningful way. So, you know, take our brand. So we actually have a brand now, which is kind of fun. We didn't really start out to do that, but it just happened organically.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's all about protecting the brand and anything we do, doing it really, really well. So we're doing an e-commerce site, which we'll have ready and live probably the 1st of September. So we're going to expand our catering business in a big way on a business site catering and an event site catering. And so now we have this live e-com site, which I never thought I'd have ever in my life, because I'm a bit of a putz when it comes to technology. but I have people in the company, like Lucky has been running that aspect of things and he's great at it. So we're growing, we're becoming more sophisticated in how we manage the business side and then the product side.
So Mark, when you talk about an e-commerce site, are you selling retail products on there?
No, it's mainly catering. So if you don't want to talk to a human being, you can pull up our webpage, all our information, all our photos of food, all our listings and products. You can do the entire transaction, pay on your credit card. So we've kind of entered the 21st century.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was a big endeavor for us because it's not something we'd ever done before, right?
For sure. So let's talk a little bit about McEwen's at Young & Bloor. You mentioned you opened three businesses last year. That was one of them. What motivated you to open an upscale grocery store in the first place? I know that was always something that probably was in the back of your mind. But why a retail component and why Young & Bloor?
Well, I always loved food retail. So, you know, we would vacation and the first place we would go is the outdoor markets or the markets, or go to New York and go to Chelsea and different places. And I just love that whole retail food scene when it's done at a quality level. So I had that interest many, many years ago. Young and Bloor is to me is the heart of the country. It's like the it's like center ice. So to have a space there in and amongst the density, and there's such a huge build out going on now that if I look, if I project out 5 years, there'll be 6,500 more people living within one block of us.
Crazy.
So, and everybody eats and few people cook in their condos.
That's right.
So to do food retail where 80% of your offer is prepared, and we also deliver through Inabuggy. So you can connect directly through us to Inabuggy. They'll shop your list and be at your door with the groceries or the prepared food within 2 hours. So we also have that component in place.
Incredible. And how much of a radius do you cover with that delivery?
Oh, I think we go out about 15K, and they only charge $20.
Wow.
So it's really cost affordable, and this to me is the best way to have groceries delivered to your home without question. So we have that format live in all three stores now. And we're going to be doing a big ad campaign within Inabuggy, some commercials and some stuff on the web, and then some stuff across the city on billboards, just advertising that component. So you try to fit into the lifestyle. So if you take McEwen TD, which is right below Bimark, so I have a Fabrica component there, I have Bimark, and I have the McEwen retail.
Right.
You see all these young professionals, you know, they're anywhere, their age group is generally from 25 to 55. They're buying a food story that they believe in, that it's quality.
Mm-hmm.
They want real food. They don't want old style prepared food, bad salads where you put a few tomatoes and feta cheese on top and it's all romaine lettuce underneath.
Right.
They want real food stories. So we make everything from scratch, and it's been a huge success for us. And people pay a tiny bit more, but they know what they're getting.
Right? For sure.
So, and I think that's the clientele we have is very discerning, right down to their coffee, to their sandwich, to their lunch, to their, you know, squeezed vegetable juice in the morning. So I love catering to that market because that's what excites me.
So what would be your average price for a meal in the store that people would pick up either for lunch or dinner?
It's $15 to $20.
Okay.
You know, it all depends on, we sell most of it by weight, or you buy a composed salad at a predetermined price. You buy a beverage, you know, if you go to the hot table and there's 45 different selections on the hot table, all served in Le Creuset pots, and it's all made fresh that day.
Beautiful.
So you can eat beautiful curries, authentic curries, and Shen Usman, who's my executive chef, he does an amazing Middle Eastern end on the food and the company, just really incredible. You know, right down to properly made sandwiches and paninis and sushi, and so you can eat something different every single day, and it's lovely because we see people three times a day.
Incredible! You have them for you have a captive audience.
Yeah, and I said I apologize for your visa bill this month. You're probably going to be cursing me end of month, but people have to eat every day, and they're very busy.
Yeah, people don't have the time to go home and cook after a long day at work, right?
No, and you know, it's cheaper to buy prepared food. By the time you go out and grocery shop and you buy, you know, soup to nuts to do a recipe, you waste half of it. It sits in your fridge. You don't utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
So the people we deal with, generally, I'd say the 80 percentile, they're buying one bag of food for the next day and a half.
That's true.
And it's sort of a lifestyle I observed in New York because my wife and I and the kids, we've always gone to New York a great deal of time. And you watch people move and they all live within a neighborhood and they have a place to shop. And one hand, they have a briefcase. And one hand, they have one small shopping bag. And that's the way they live in New York. And we now live that way in Toronto.
And they also have beautiful kitchens that they don't use.
primarily, yeah. you stand in them when you have a dinner party. Everybody stands in the kitchen. It's sort of a Canadian pastime. It's the weirdest
thing. Right. So how is McEwen at Young & Bloor different from, let's say, the shops of Don Mills?
A hybrid. It's geared to the millennial, the person living in the condo above and the building we're in. There's 750 units above us. So it's 80% prepared food. So we kind of, I have a lot less grocery aisle. It's very edited. It's
right.
It's a full shop, but I don't believe you need 12 feet of dry pasta in a grocery aisle to make sense. So
right.
We've chosen very well. You can buy anything and everything there, but primarily it's all about fresh, ready to eat.
And so when I look at other retail stores that exist in the city, whether it's Pusateri's or Whole Foods, how would you say you're different from them?
Well, I think I come at it differently because I'm a trained chef. So the priority has always been the kitchen, where none of the others are from a professional cooking background.
Mm-hmm.
So what I brought to the table with what I know and what my team brings to the table and what the restaurants bring to the table is a true ability to manufacture food at a restaurant quality level and do it consistently in small batch cooking, do it every single day. And we don't trip over ourselves. Most food retail, they have generally no expertise in that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have to hopefully hire it and bring it in and hope it works.
That's right.
Most times that's not successful. So the way we run the retail is that we have virtually zero waste except for maybe bakery. We throw a little bit of bread away. We use the store as an ability to supply the kitchen. So nothing sits longer than a day or a day and a half, and it's used.
That's incredible that you can do that. Yeah.
We make sure we utilize it. Now, it created some complexity for the chefs in the stores working the kitchens on the production side, but they got very much used to it. So I would just ingrain in them to think this way all the time, that go out into the store, look at what you have every single day, and they work with the managers in the various departments, that nothing ever comes off premium quality, and that we cycle that way. Where typically in retail, things sit on the shelf, they try to find use for it, and then you're trying to resurrect an old product, which to me doesn't work.
That's very smart.
You're kind of dead before you start with that concept. And that's the way most retail concepts operate.
So in October this fall, Eataly is going to be opening their big establishment at Bay & Bloor, just a little bit down the road from you. Are you re-examining how you do things in your own operation, knowing that that's going to be happening in a few months, or are you just doing what you do best and letting it all happen naturally?
No, so it's going to happen naturally. Eataly is a restaurant. Eataly is not a retail food store. It has a retail component. I'd love to see their P&L and look at what the retail actually produces.
Mm-hmm.
but essentially, I don't think people go to Eataly to shop. They go to Eataly to sit down and have a meal. Now, if you go to Eataly, New York, and I've gone there dozens of times, it's 95% tourists in that store at any given time. So the challenge they're going to have is Toronto is not New York. Toronto does not have the tourism and that flow of traffic that New York has. So you're going to have to duplicate that. You're going to have to build business with a lot more of a domestic business than with LA or New York City. So I'm a food retailer. Like, where you relate to me is for your morning coffee, for your lunch, for your dinner, for one bag of groceries. That is what we do, and that's what we'll always do. So I think they're very different operations. Hopefully Eataly brings more people to the neighborhood, that it's even more positive. So
sure.
I don't get too frightened with competition. Like, we've been in Yorkville at one restaurant for 13 years now. I have had restaurants, and we were the first one there, other than the Four Seasons. Everybody followed us there. We're still doing better than ever. Like, we had a record June, and I've seen people come and I've seen people go more than anything else. So you just have to stay in the game and stay relevant and continue to work at it every single day. Like, sweat the small stuff. That's what our industry is. It's very funny. I'll have a meeting with the managers, and I'm like the 10-minute meeting guy. I do not have long meetings.
Good for you.
You generally know what I'm thinking anyway, so we don't need to sit and say the same thing for an hour and a half. And if everybody knows that if I sort of want them to downline information to the rank and file all the way through, no one will ever say, "Oh, but I told them so." Because I tell the managers the same thing all the time. And all that is just reinforcing the basics. Repeat, 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 repeat the basics, right? And that is our industry. That is the heart of our industry.
Right. I mean, it doesn't change dramatically, but it's how you deal with those little, you know, important points on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. The moment you think you're special, you're going to start going backwards. You should always hear footsteps over your shoulders. Always. It's a very healthy position to be in life.
So do you approach staffing in your McEwen shop differently from how you approach it in restaurants?
Absolutely. We try to find genuinely nice people that have a good work ethic and that have an open mind and know how to be punctual and are client driven. So that I just keep reminding them that this is the hospitality business, right? That means we're taking care of people. We're being hospitable, and that's first and foremost. You have to be of that makeup, right? And that's what it's about. It's not about us, not about our ego. It's about their lunch. It's about their experience in the store. So yeah, we look for the same type of animal in both places, and that's positive, hardworking, thoughtful, you know, teachable. I'll hire personality over experience.
So I was just saying, you're hiring attitude.
I'll hire attitude over a CV. Yeah, absolutely, every day.
Okay. Do you think, other than the fact that we were talking about earlier about millennials, do you think today's staff is different from, let's say, the staff you hired 30 years ago?
Yeah, I think I go back to an earlier comment I made. I think a lot of people, young people today, are more distracted. Not to say that you don't find gems. We still find gems all the time.
Right.
So I have sort of a 2 in 10 rule that I'll hire 2 and I'll hire 10 and 2 will be amazing. So you want to keep those 2, right? And those are the people you grow your company with and build with, and they stay with you and you bring them up through the ranks. So yeah, it's just like the world is running at a faster pace. I remember when we opened Bimark 16 years ago, we were one of the only restaurants down here. There was Jump, Canoe, and myself.
That's right.
And maybe a couple steakhouses. By 6:15, there wasn't one person on the street. You could blow a cannon off and not hit anybody.
Very
so
true.
You look the bustling town, 9:30 at night, King Street in the downtown core is still busy. So our city has gone through this massive, massive amount of change, and it's affected people. But I go back again to social media. I think people spend way too much time on it. Way too much time.
So Mark, earlier, or I guess, I can't remember when it was now, sometime last year, you opened the smaller footprint of Fabrica in the financial center. What prompted you to do this? Why not a full-scale restaurant like Fabrica and the smaller footprint?
Well, the space came to me as an opportunity. Cadillac Fairview approached me. I thought it was a great way for us to take the Fabrica brand and kind of show it in a different ilk, on a quick service concept.
Mm-hmm.
Then we took that quick service Fabrica concept from TD, the way we amended it, and we embedded it in the Young & Bloor store as a brand within a brand. So now we have the McEwen brand with the Fabrica brand embedded inside of it, which we thought was interesting because it's transportable then, right? So opportunity can come at you in different ways and different forms. It's realistic for us to take that concept and have it at two levels, not quality levels, just kind of offer level.
It's a brilliant idea.
I think it just opens up more opportunity for us.
Are you going to do that elsewhere as well or no?
Oh, for sure we will. For sure we will. And then I built a Fabrica up in Thornbury, Ontario, which is kind of my country place. And the town has embraced it beautifully. And we're cooking the same as we do within the two brands of Fabrica in the city. And again, so, you know, maybe in 4 years, we'll have six of them. We'll have nine of them.
So why cottage?
Well, I wanted a specific restaurant in the town that I have my home in. I wanted a bar to go
to
through.
Work while you're at the cottage. That's what you're saying.
Well, you know, it's kind of fun. I don't mind. I don't view it as work. So but I wanted a certain type of food offer, and I just found I couldn't get it anywhere. So I thought, why don't we just do it?
So how many seats there?
65 seats inside, and we have a patio of 50. So it's a lovely size. That's a charming, charming space. And, you know, Derek and Juliana do a wonderful job. Derek's my chef, and Juliana runs the front of the house. They do a really great job. We have a wood-burning oven, so we're doing beautiful Roman pizzas. And Derek had worked with Rob Gentile for a while.
Right.
So he's kind of emulated Rob's style of pizza there and done just a terrific job with it. But we make all our pastas by hand and beautiful branzino and octopus. And so you can sit at the bar and have a glass of wine. We have a nice wine list, a proper cocktail, proper linen napkin, and two or three plates of food, and go home or go skiing, right?
You're making me hungry, Mark.
Yeah, you know, it's been very well accepted by everybody, so we're quite happy.
So it's open year-round, summer and winter?
Summer and winter, yeah.
Okay.
Year-round. So town of Thornbury is where we have it, and our water place is just a few miles away, but that's one of the greatest things I ever did was buy there, build there. It's like my little...
getaway.
Oh, totally.
So what's been the biggest...
Where I go to recharge.
For sure, you need to. What's been the biggest learning for you from that experience of cottage country? Because it's quite different from running the restaurants in the city.
Labor is hard here. labor up there is almost non-existent.
Okay.
Number one, you have a housing shortage for them, so there's very few places for them to live. So the big dilemma that Blue Mountain area has, and they're going to have to deal with this, is that if they want to grow as a tourist spot, that's their intention.
Right.
First and foremost, they need to put in proper affordable housing that, you know, if you're an Aussie student and you want to work for a year and come over to Canada, that you could find a place to find proper accommodation that you could work. And then they need a beefed up transit system. So finding personnel up there is absolutely the hardest part. Now we've been pretty fortunate, but in talking to all the other shopkeepers and restaurant owners up there, that is the number one thing on their wake up list every day, for sure.
It's what keeps them awake at night.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, their good staff is few and far between.
So what keeps you awake at night?
Oh boy. Turned 62. I wasn't too happy about that. I tell you.
Let's not go there, Mark.
I know. Just the whole age thing sort of freaks me out once in a while when I think about it.
Yeah.
I still think I'm 40. You know,
mentally, you know, you stay, 40, right?
Yeah, you stay active, and yep. You know, physically, you're in good shape. But 62, I'm like, the next big one is 70. I think I'm gonna have to you know, get medicated for that birthday.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, you know, I don't have too much that keeps me up. Like you have a lot of employees. You have to run your business as well. You've got to get them on track when they're not on track, and you've got to figure it out. There's always those daily challenges, right? But my son and his wife Lisa had a baby this year, and my daughter's the owner of two restaurants with her boyfriend in New York City. They're in Brooklyn and thriving, doing really well. So
doing really well.
Look
there,
your,
that's great.
Yeah, you look at your kids and you look at life, and you know, the things you really stress yourself out about. If you're dead and gone and sitting on a cloud looking down, you wouldn't give it a moment's thought. So you need perspective. You need to keep things in perspective all the time.
Very wise. So with so many different successes under your belt, really, what do you think is your biggest accomplishment?
Oh, I would say staying relevant for a long period of time.
Yeah, not too many people can claim that, Mark.
Yeah, like TV is kind of a fun, fluffy thing you do. I don't take it too so. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but we have fun doing it. I've always been more a business person and chef and business person. So just staying relevant is the hardest thing and the most rewarding thing when it actually happens.
So when I look at everything you've done and I say to myself, okay, what inspires you? Like, what is it that you look at and say, okay, I want to do this differently, or I want to innovate in this way? Where do you get your inspiration from?
I like change, and I like to feel challenged, and I like fresh water. So expanding for me was a big, easy point of interest for me, you know, like ramping the company up and building it and keeping people and moving them from one job up into a more important position with more responsibility. And that never felt like a lot of weight. Just sort of felt like a normal reaction to the day. So for me, that seemed like a normal course for me. I don't know. I've never thought differently.
So going back a few years, when I first met you at Pronto, which doesn't exist anymore.
1985.
Yeah. Did you ever see the day like today that would come, that you would be running an empire with so many different types of businesses? Did you ever want that in the beginning, or did you just think this is what I'm going to do for a few years?
No, I never thought short term, but I didn't think back then that I would have 9 operations. Built itself organically over time. But when you look back at it, it's interesting. The only one I've really closed was North 44. That was just due sheer real estate deal. I couldn't do the real estate. It wouldn't sell it. I didn't want to dump a whole bunch more money into a lease situation there. And
right.
The neighborhood had changed somewhat. The whole building had to be redone. So it felt bad when I closed that one. But it's funny. I never thought much about the whole... I never expanded for the sake of, I just want to be big.
Right.
Opportunity knocked at our door. I would evaluate it and think, yes, that's a good deal, or no, that's not. And I've said no to far more than I've done.
That's incredible.
I've said no to hundreds, right? Because when you have a successful restaurant or a store, every landlord will contact you if they have available space, and you get lots of opportunities. So we've said no to the vast, vast majority of opportunities. So, which I'm happy about, because So retail is where I really want to grow, and I still have some things to learn in retail, and so we're kind of morphing our business plan and how we relate to people and how we sell and how do we get product to people, how do we connect with people, the younger generation. Like for Young and Blur, we just did a whole vegan program. So full 100% vegan meals prepared, ready to go.
Makes sense.
So we have a full section of that in the store now. So we did ours genuine, like right down to perfect detail. So that person can feel comfortable coming in. So we keep adding layers of story like that. And we have a few other ideas that we're going to launch in the fall. So lots going on.
Are you looking to expand the McEwen concept outside Toronto at all?
I've had lots of opportunity. I haven't done it yet. I still think we have room to grow here, but never say never, right? You don't know. Montreal would scare me, being that I don't speak French, and I think you, as a basic, you need to be able to speak French
for
well.
Sure. Yeah.
I think they'd eat me alive. down to you don't just go to Vancouver and land. So I'm not that confident. I'm not that confident that I can just go anywhere. So I've got to really, really think about what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. Because we need to execute well and be successful.
So a few years ago, I guess 2 years ago now, maybe three, you sold 45% of your company to Fairfax Holdings. Has that changed the way you approach your business, or has it given you a kind of freedom to get maybe even more creative if that's possible?
How I relate to the business at all hasn't changed how I function on a daily basis. They're a very quiet company. You don't hear from them a lot.
That's true.
But they also have a lot of very sophisticated management expertise that you can draw from. Mm-hmm. So if you kind of use them as a knowledge pool, a wall to bounce things off, and then certainly they have a pretty wide swatch that they cover and a lot of respect in the industry. So when people see you as being a partner with them, I think it lends even a little more credibility to your business and your base. So I think it's just a positive all around. And they're very interested in expanding and growing the business as I have always been. So I think we think exactly alike.
So it's a good marriage.
That's a great marriage, and they're a numbers company, so they keep you very focused on numbers, which is great because it keeps you in good health.
Necessary, right?
Yeah, it's. But it was kind of interesting taking on a partner. I'd never had one other than a wife.
And you've had her for a long time, too. That's great.
Almost 40 years, my God.
I know. It's incredible.
Again, we're talking about that age thing, which I hate talking about.
I know. So we'll get away from that age thing. So one last question for you. And I know you're not really a trends guy, because I think your approach to business is a little bit more substantive than that. But if you had to look at the marketplace and say, here's some of the key trends that are really shaping today's world and maybe in the next couple of years, what would those trends be?
I think the trends are finally online and I feel good about them. So I'll cite a young gentleman who worked for me for a long time, Rob Gentile, as a sort of a leader in what I consider to be a trend in the city. And that's about original authenticity of recipe and execution, mm-hmm. Rather than gimmicks. I don't think gimmicks fly anymore at all. I think our clientele is they're just too smart for it. They're too well-traveled. It falls down to expertise of operation, expertise of execution. And for me, that is the new trend and a great focus for people. So it's not necessarily that you recreated the dish, but you learn to do it perfectly, and you do it perfectly every day. So I think if you as a chef, if that's the way you think, it'll hold you in really good standing.
I think that comes across in all the food that you create. When I look at Fabrica as an example of Italian food, it's true to Italian. It's very authentic. And I think that's what people recognize when they go and dine there. So kudos to you for being able to do that. And also you mentioned Rob.
Thank you.
And others, you've mentored a lot of people in this industry. So when I look at the industry and the chefs who are working out there, your stamp is on a lot of these young chefs. So again, you've really done a great job of being able to translate your vision for success to others, which is not easy.
It's been a fun ride, that's for sure. And I'm very happy to have crossed paths with all these young characters. They're not that young anymore. Now they're all pushing 40, and
does that
now
mean
they have families and multiple businesses.
I know, it's pretty amazing.
It's very gratifying, I have to say.
I'm sure it is. So you've done a great job, Mark, and I really want to thank you for spending some of your morning with us.
Pleasure, Rosanna.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of the Table Talk Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love for you to rate and review our show. Also, make sure you never miss an episode by clicking the subscribe button. For additional resources related to today's episode, please visit our website, foodserviceandhospitality.com. Until next time.